Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Economics Design Podcast. My name is Ari Kimmelman. I'm a research analyst here with Economics Design. And today I'm extraordinarily excited to be joined by our guest today, Howie Zhang, the head economy designer of the blockchain game Guild of Guardians. Guild of Guardians is one of the most anticipated blockchain games to be released, with over 500,000 players on the waitlist. It is a mobile multiplayer action RPG where players take their team of heroes through challenging dungeons to collect resources and earn experience. They use these resources to craft items or summon heroes, which can be traded for real money. Players will be able to build their dream team and will work with their guild to earn a leaderboard and seasonal prizes. So with that said, Howie, thank you for coming on the podcast today. It's great to have you here. Could you please introduce yourself?
Thanks, Ari. No, it's my pleasure to be here. Economics Design does some really interesting thought leadership articles. I always very eager to read your new content. And yeah, just stoked. So a bit of an introduction, I guess. I have a background in traditional finance. I did postgraduate studies at the University of Sydney in market microstructure. I spent 7 years working at the stock exchange, where I was previously quant analyst, and basically, yeah, focused on things like market design, electronic execution, and market making. So I always been pretty interested in blockchain technology, but it wasn't until 2017 that I actually dabbled in the crypto markets. Always more interested in the sort of smart contracts, the Ethereum side of things, rather than sort of like the more, I guess, payment type of like Bitcoin, I guess. And yeah, so in 2017, I think I had my first exposure to NFTs, saw that people were that there was a project called Crypto Kitties out there, was pretty fascinated by that, bought my first NFT, and just really could see the gamification potential of the blockchain. And, you know, being an avid gamer in the past, I really saw that going forward, that gaming could be like a major use case. Yeah, with my role in traditional finance, I was also quite interested in the sort of DeFi elements at the time. You know, first stable coins were coming out, automated market makers were coming out. They also fascinated me because I thought that was like professionally more relevant to me. But when sort of things died down in the ensuing bear market, I sort of focused on my career, went back to traditional finance, all the way until, I guess, 2021, where, you know, we had DeFi summer, we had NFT summer. And I saw that some of my previous classmates and friends had joined this exciting Australian startup that was also doing NFTs and gaming. And I just thought that was an opportunity that was too good to pass up. I basically, yeah, I applied to Immutable for a role that wasn't very defined at the time. But eventually evolved into this game economist role, which, you know, it's a relatively new field. I guess traditionally these game economists were just game designers, but with the advent of, you know, Web3 and blockchain, there's been an increasing need to understand the sort of the more, I guess, serious economic ramifications of designing a player-to-player free and open market.
Great. I think that's a very interesting background, how we've merged from a PhD in finance all the way into a game economy role in Guild of Guardians. That's an awesome background. I would like to do two things for the conversation today. I would like you to start us off by telling us a little bit about Guild of Guardians and the project and where the team is currently at in terms of its development. And then we'll head into a little bit of a conversation about the economics of the game. So it would be great if you could start us off by telling us a little bit about the project.
Yeah, sure. So Guild of Guardians is, as you said, a squad-based action mobile action RPG, quite influenced by the traditional action RPGs such as Diablo, but also the mobile genre and the sort of like more casual free-to-play types of gameplay. We decided to go mobile because that had the largest addressable market, and also at the time of our development, we didn't see many good RPGs being developed. And, you know, for any gamer who knows, RPGs are inherently like economy based, right? Where there is a strong need for to calibrate the resources and sort of items and heroes, and those things have value and usually scarce value. So in terms of the economy, it's meant to be quite sophisticated. Like I said, it's meant to resemble the more traditional PC MMORPGs that we see. It will have like crafting, dungeon progression, pets, Ascension Systems. And then in terms of development, I mean, we're fairly advanced in the development of the core gameplay. So I would say like the arts, the art assets, the levels, combat, etc. But we're also at a point where, you know, the industry has moved a lot in the last year and a half. And so, you know, there's a need for us to ensure that we're keeping at the forefront of it. And so we're constantly trying to iterate and improve the experience. And where we're focused on improving the experience is in the metagame, in the strategy, in the economy aspects of it. So those elements are still in flux, whereas the sort of the art and the core assets are all kind of done already.
Got it. So first, I guess, direct question here about the economy design of the game. I'm wondering if you could explain why the team elected to use a single token model, and additionally, whether that token can be sold immediately on a centralized or decentralized exchange.
Yeah, I mean, good question. We decided to go with a single token model because really at the time, it seemed like the simplest option that suited our purpose. You know, GOG launched the token about 12 months prior to the expected release date, right? And, you know, in the last 12 months, players haven't been able to actually play the game. So the idea of separating a utility token from like a governance token just wasn't necessary at the time because it doesn't have utility. And we really thought, you know, because it was launched in advance of the game's launch, the token would be a useful way for us to build the community, allow players to gain exposure to our project and create like mechanisms for marketing. It was kind of a tool for that. You know, after launch, the primary utility for GOG tokens is to pay for minting costs and transaction fees. So there's also a mechanism where, you know, some portion of these fees charged are redistributed back to token holders in the form of like active staking, which is like requires a player to undertake some value accretive action, whether that be governance or, you know, like perhaps promotion, in order to receive the returns on that token. And then the secondary purpose of having that sort of financial feedback is to sort of try to stabilize that token price and give it some fundamental value, so it's not like just being wildly speculated on. Overall, we see the token's purposes as providing in-game utility, not as a security. And then finally, I think I personally like one token models a little bit more because it kind of just aggregates liquidity into a single product instead of like fragmenting it over two products. And I'll say that like initially when markets are thin and there's not much liquidity, there's not many, relatively few holders of the token, sort of focusing on liquidity probably is more important than, you know, focusing on sort of, you know, trying to provide different use cases for different personas or categories of users. Many of our actual in-game resources, so the things you use to play the game, are actually not tradable. They're kind of like soft currency in the game. And so, you know, like if people are worried about the tokens not having sort of not being able to use as a medium exchange, the reality is that the game's has other types of resources for that, which are not tokens. Yeah, and then I guess the final point is, yes, it is possible for you to sell your GOG token on a centralized exchange or a decentralized exchange. Unfortunately, one of the major centralized exchanges that you could sell your tokens on has been having issues lately. But what you'll be required to do is you'll have to take your tokens off layer two back to layer one and then transfer it to like a DeFi pool or a centralized exchange. And then lastly, I'll say that we're not sort of dogmatic about how we do our tokenomics. If there is a compelling need to have two tokens and if we see that, you know, that one token is not working, either because, you know, it's not, price is not stable, it's not just not a good currency to use to trade game assets, then we're open to releasing more fungible tokens.
That makes sense. A lot of information packed in there already. I'm glad we're, you know, 10 minutes in and some great details. I'd love to move on to another conversation topic, being the NFTs. So in the white paper, it's written that one of the mechanics of the game is that the only way to create NFTs are through guilds. So I'm wondering if you could explain why this decision was made and how it contributes to creating a sustainable economy within the game.
Sure. So I will have to correct you there. it's not true that only guilds can create NFTs. Only guilds can create equipment NFTs, so the items that the heroes use. Players can create hero NFTs via solo progression. So, you know, like as our namesake suggests, guilds are a big focus and feature of our game, part of the core gameplay and economy and what sort of drives the goals and aspirations of players to play the game. From a design perspective, the reason we sort of just wanted guilds to be a focus point and why it's seen as being so important in our economy is that we really wanted to double down on the social elements of gameplay, because as a Web3 game, we wanted, you know, in order for us to our primary monetization technique is via like secondary market trading, right? And so we want trades to occur. We want people to collaborate and play as part of a community. And we think that this is the effort that generates fun in the game, right? So in terms of aligns the work that a player needs to do with fun that the player experiences, right? And so they, in playing the game, they contribute their labor. And in doing so, they provide sort of more fun to other people who are playing the game. And so that's seen as an alignment of value there. You know, another thing we want to see is we want to see like specialization occur, because we believe that also promotes trade. So we want to see guilds focus on certain domains where they have competitive advantages in, and through that sort of facilitate this trading ecosystem, this player-driven economy. And then, you know, how I view these guilds is similar to like a taxi medallion model in the real world. Basically, you know, we give these guilds and confer them like a monopoly on providing a type of service or product. And then that allows us to sort of monitor and regulate that monopoly and sort of like basically helps us control the economics of that industry.
Got it. Okay. I want to move on to a different subject here. Talk about user onboarding. Do players need to connect wallets in order to start playing, or they don't need a wallet?
Currently, they do not need a personal wallet in the sense that player should be able to onboard, play the game, and the wallet is taken care of by a custodian. They have the option of using their personal wallet and sort of like transferring assets to that personal wallet. But the idea here is a very, like, we want to improve the user experience on the Web3 side of things as much as possible. We also want to ensure that mainstream players who have no previous experience in Web3 don't get overwhelmed with sort of this wallet creation process, right? So if you are Web3 savvy and you kind of like want to keep your own wallet, keep your own assets, perfectly understand there's options to do that. But I think the default assumption is that like players themselves won't be expected to mess around with wallets.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. And I would agree that that's a trend currently going on for blockchain games currently in development as well. So I would love to go into a little bit of a conversation about sustainable gaming economies in general. So my question here is, we've seen failed economic models in previous play and earn, play to earn games. I'm wondering essentially what steps the team is taking to ensure that the game in its entirety is in fact sustainable.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for other projects too much because we are in a state of discovery for the whole industry, right? As previously noted, like Web3 games so far haven't proven to be very sustainable, and our goal is to be sustainable. I think most games don't design unsustainable economies deliberately, right? Like it's more like there's a lot of tensions in Web3 game design that haven't been entirely resolved, I think, from a like a economics principles basis, right? And you know, I can speak a little bit about the challenges that I see that makes it difficult to do this. But I think one of the things is economies, whether real or virtual, are predicated on some type of underlying growth, right? You know, like a economy that has, you know, declining population, declining levels of consumption is unsustainable in the long run, right? But in terms of Web3 and games in particular, like these things can happen on such an accelerated cycle that it really, the interventions that need to be taken, maybe there isn't sufficient time to take measured approaches. And so, you know, I strongly think that like demographic factors drive that long-term sustainability. And for a game, these demographic factors are user growth and user retention, right? If you can hit your metrics for those two, then you have a good pathway. And so that's this why there's this focus on fun, right? Because fun drives those two things. I think managing a bit of that is important as well, because the flip side of user growth is user churn, right? Or the flip side of retention is churn. And when you have user churn and you have a free and open economy, then you have the ability, like you have this inflation or supply problem, right? Where excessive amounts of assets can hit the market and then suppress prices and produce like negative externalities for everyone. So this is the next thing that we try to focus on. Keep a close eye on inflation. Try to control supply emission. Make sure you don't, don't reward assets too early into a player's life cycle. Because if you look at retention curves, they tend to drop. Like there's a kink, right? I think once a player is sticky and they're going to play, you can time that sort of, the emission of assets according to sort of that retention curve. So, and then in addition to that, we actually, our model is one where there is meant to be limited supply, right? So with these NFTs that are minted, there's a maximum number per hero and per type. Now, what that maximum number is, it's kind of not really defined right now. It's going to be subject to sort of our user growth expectations. So there's going to be a constant kind of like live kind of balancing exercise that's going to occur. And then another thing that we're going to do to try to control that supply and thereby control inflation is to set like a escalating mint cost curve. And basically, just make it the more that there is of a particular asset, the more expensive it is to actually mint. That should encourage secondary market trading. And then finally, I think the idea of net deflationary sinks, things that sort of reduce total supply and don't sort of just kick that can down the road. But that's difficult, right? Like net deflationary sinks is basically you're asking players to be spending more money deliberately, like basically reduce their net wealth or the total value of holdings. And it's all fine and good saying, we need deflationary sinks, but it's kind of from a game design perspective, any deflationary sink you design is going to be a feels bad moment for your player, which will then hurt retention, right? So you got to manage and balance this. From our perspective, our strategy is really a lot of economic modeling, a lot of quantitative modeling, a lot of risk assessments and scenario-based modeling. But ultimately, what's going to bind it all together is we need a quite a sophisticated like live monitoring capability, right? To be able to understand where the potential frictions in the economy lie, where are the problematic aspects, and take quick preventive action on those things with the parameters that we can tweak. And as a game economist, technically, I think that's possible. As like in a game, we have almost complete control over how the economy works. It should be possible for us to pull the levers necessary to sort of keep us like a sustainable level of activity within the economy.
Okay, great. I think that perfectly answers my question. I want to discuss a little bit about stabilizing the economy. We talked about it just now, but two questions in particular here. I'm wondering if you could explain exactly, I guess from a business perspective, exactly how the game generates revenue. So what are the sources of revenue? And additionally, if you could talk a little bit about token sinks within the game, as a lever, like you previously mentioned, and any other levers that might be used to manipulate the economy.
Yeah, sure. So in terms of revenue, it's generated through a combination of minting costs, primary sales, and marketplace royalties, right? So those are the three broad buckets. I think initially we expect so far revenue has been generated through primary sales, right? So that's direct sales of NFTs, these founder edition NFTs that will never be listed again. Never be sold again, directly to sort of core and loyal kind of player base, right? So a pre-sale. But I think as we transition to a live game, I think initially minting costs will drive the substantial proportion of revenue. And then over time, I mentioned previously that the number of mints will be decreasing as more NFTs are minted. The cost will also be rising, but at a certain point, we expect then the secondary market to kick in, and then the royalties to ultimately be the the biggest contributor to the revenue pie. In terms of levers and things that we can do to sort of control, I guess if you want to focus on token sinks, we'll be setting aside a portion of like our tokens pool from like the tokens we receive from the minting costs. Some portion of that will be set aside to have a asset buyback program. Yeah, so targeting, this remains to be seen, but targeting areas which have a high, I guess, multiplier effect on the rest of the economy, right? If I was to hypothesize, I would probably suggest, like, if you supported the prices of like the legendary items or the like really rare guild tokens, that would have a outsized impact compared to sort of trying to support the prices of the sort of more common types of NFTs. But that's a hypothesis. We'll have to, we'll have to do some experimentation to see what that results in. I think in terms of in-game balance tools that we have to control tokens, I think, there's ways to affect the sync side, which is basically, you know, you can increase the costs of minting. You can overall make it more costly to do activities. I think that's quite clear. But on the emission side of it, I mean, we also can affect the amount of tokens that get emitted on a daily basis. I think these are always kind of a bit macro in terms of how they work, because kind of like a blunt tool, it's like that'll be the monetary policy, right? It's like, oh, just slow down the economic activity or accelerate it. But I think on the micro level, that's where a game designer or economy designer can really come in and like start affecting hero utility, item utility, soft resources, you know, like how many times you can play a day, what kind of like penalties arise from playing to sort of like exceeding those limits and what those limits should be. And then finally, I think as a game designer, you have another option, which is just designing new features and syncs, right? If you see that the current syncs and features are not that effective at syncing tokens, then you can iterate on that and say, okay, well, let's expand cosmetics or expand pets, because people really like the pet features, let's go into like adversarial types of player versus player like game modes. So those don't, you know, they take time to develop. Hopefully we have enough syncs at launch to get us to the, you know, I guess the iterative part of things. We believe we do. Like I said, we're very focused on the supply and demand side of things and trying to ensure that we are able to, that our initial assumptions sort of are good, that we test those assumptions with in a demo or play test environment. And then number three, that we have the tools to balance during the live environment.
Okay. That makes sense. One of the things I'm wondering about is people extracting from the game. We've seen this in a lot of other games. And one of the things I noticed in the white paper is there's in fact an ability for a player to grind within the game and eventually earn an NFT, which I believe can be sold, if I'm correct. So I'm wondering if this is a potential issue in terms of extracting from the game, if you see, let's say, for example, 80% of players trying to extract from the economy.
Yeah, in terms of extraction, like this is something that people are quite concerned about. And I am also sort of concerned about it, but I also think that it's very hard to find a good solution to it, because the reality is if your game is good and you have a lot of players that are playing for fun, the extractors just come part and parcel, like in terms of like how are you going to gate? An extractor doesn't sort of provide any indication that they're extractive. And in fact, you know, as a play to earn game, you kind of you're selling people on the idea of, you know, you owning your digital assets and then you being able to resell it when you're done with it, right? So kind of that, like, it's a contradiction in my opinion to ostracize value extractors, right? Because yeah, they form part of your key demographic, and they're the kind of innovation that's coming into this space. I think the design challenge is, you know, during the value extraction, number one, are you providing some other form of value to the community or player base? And that's why we lean into, you know, guild-based gameplay, and we make guild crafting be like a significant source of value generation and also value extraction by that means, right? Like the fact that you have to coordinate with like 20 other players in order to, you know, craft an NFT in order to for you to sell that NFT means that like if your guild, you know, half of them could be just in it to try to make money. But, you know, the other half could just be generally they need you to be participating on the guild raids. They need you to be like trying to contribute your resources into the craft. And then they need your votes to decide on what price to sell the NFT at, right? So those kind of social gameplay features should add value to the players, right? So that's kind of how we view it. Another thing to add is, I guess, with value extraction, you can convert an extractor into, I don't know what you call it, but basically a contributor, right? Like we see it as a conversion point, right? Like, yeah, it's if we can convince them not to sell their assets and to keep playing, then the job is done, right? In the same way that like free-to-play games, if you can, you know, convert them into paying for the game, then that's a big for you. And so, you know, we view it similarly, right? Players may come in initially with the expectation of extracting value, but in the long, we hope in the long run that they'll stay around. We also, you know, the game is designed in a way that if you extract too much, you can't progress. So there's going to be some sort of trade-off for you. Like if you are really taking out all your earnings or all your assets, then you stunt your own growth and other people can accelerate past you. So there's kind of that dynamic that also exists.
Okay. Cool. I know that another element of the white paper is a very strong emphasis on interoperability. So I'm wondering if you could share the team's vision on this point and how you plan to achieve it.
Yeah. So interoperability is one of those kind of things that, you know, they've been talked about a lot in Web3, but, you know, you see it very rarely implemented. And, you know, that's always the reason is that the incentives are not aligned for games to allow interoperability to occur. I'll go in more into this, but I think Immutable is probably one of the best positioned companies or studios to actually have a measure of interoperability within our games, right? Like we have an in-house studio that does Guild Guardian, Gods Unchained. We have partners that are building on the Immutable ecosystem. And then, you know, there's a technology platform that underpins it all, you know, and we focus on gaming only. So that combined with a high level collaboration with our partners means that we have probably the building blocks to realize interoperability. Now, the reason I don't think we see interoperability right now is because I think there's a lot of metrics that haven't been defined for Web3 gaming. Right now, we're still using very Web2 centric metrics, like LTV, average lifetime value, those metrics. And when you use Web2 metrics, interoperability seems to cannibalize your revenue, right? Why would I let another game's assets play my game's assets when, you know, didn't contribute revenue to us? So I think when it comes to that, I think then it will be a gradual change as people understand, oh, okay, by allowing interoperability, we are able to unlock more user acquisition. And then through user acquisition, we get more minting and more secondary trading. And through these channels, then interoperability is seen as advantageous, right? So we're just a little bit too early to do that. But, you know, Immutable has quite a deep Web3 culture in terms of like what we're trying to do is do digital ownership. And so... I think, don't quote me on it, but I would say that there will be some form of interoperability sooner rather than later for us.
Very exciting. Last question for today here. What's next for the team and the project's development?
Yeah, so like I previously alluded to, the core gameplay and core product exists. And sort of a lot of the development work on the game side is done. Right now, there is still a lot of technical challenges with the blockchain side of things. Like in order for it to not be like a suboptimal user experience, you know, like the custodial wallets and the things I've talked about, all those things need to be really figured out before the game is ready to ship. So, you know, there's a technical side of those things. Another thing that we are focused right now on is trying to really polish the game to a point where it is like really fun to play. Like we have a lot of we've got a lot of positive reception from like the demo tests that we sent out to players, but we're conscious that we don't want to be biased to like a Web3 audience. Like in order for this game to succeed, we want it to be a mainstream hit, right? That can, you know, potentially get millions of players, right? And in order to do that, we need to focus, I guess, back to the gameplay, like not so much focus on the Web3 side, more focus on the strategic side of the game, like making sure that the moment-to-moment gameplay is fun, that people have reasons to want to collect the NFTs, that there's that people can form emotional attachments to their assets and their characters. So I think that's what the focus for the broader team is on. My primary goal right now is to validate all these economic models that we have, and the only way we can really validate that is if we run it on a Web3 test environment. But you know, like that's again a technical challenge. Like how do, like, you know, like a lot of things that currently already exist on like mainnet don't exist on testnet, right? So like you go, oh okay, well we just, like it's not as simple as, oh, we just launch the game on the testnet, because then like, oh well, how players getting tokens? Like there is no centralized, or there's no like DeFi solution on testnet, and so you kind of go, oh well, if we have to design these things, isn't that probably sort of better off just launching on mainnet? But then you kind of come up against the tension of, oh well, we can't just launch untested. So these kind of sort of like technical matters, like how do we get from here to a smooth launch, and how do we like experiment, learn, iterate, and improve? Those are things that like are taking up a lot of my time and attention. But I think we have a plan to a solid plan to success. But you know, like I said, what we're doing here is so new and so unknown in many respects, that like the only way that anyone is, I feel gonna see, is if we learn and have an environment that allows us to learn quickly, right? And everyone's gonna make mistakes, but you know, being able to minimize the impact of those mistakes and being able to rectify those mistakes quickly is going to be a crucial differentiating factor for successful projects and not successful ones.
Yeah, that's very well said. Howie, with that question, that concludes our conversation today. Thank you so much for joining me. It was awesome to have you here and really do a deep dive into the economics of Guild of Guardians. I'm very excited to see Guild of Guardians be released and flourish as a blockchain game. In my opinion, it's one of the most exciting ones to come out. So for our listeners out there, if you like this video, please let us know in the comments and feel free to subscribe to our YouTube channel as well as our podcast. If you have any questions, leave them in the comments or in the Economics Design Discord chat. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.